You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, and this is the Play Therapy Podcast. In today's episode, I'm breaking the mold. I'm not doing a question from a listener, and I'm not doing a regular part of the curriculum and training. I had a crazy session this week, and if you follow me on social media, I've posted a picture of what my room looked like, and I've had a lot of people respond, and I've had some questions and comments from that. So I decided that it would be helpful for me as well as all of you if I debrief that session. So this is kind of a day in the life of a child-centered play therapist type of episode, and I think this will be really beneficial because this was just a whopper. And I've been doing this a really long time, almost 2 decades, and I've never had a session quite like this. I've had components of this session in lots of ways, but all together, this was the craziest session I've ever had in a good and a bad way. So let's dive in. I kind of want to go just as an overview of what happened in the session, and then I want to talk through mess making play. I want to talk through aggression. I want to talk about when you have to touch a child and what that process is like and what your considerations should be. I want to talk through the internal work that you have to have done to handle a session like that. That was actually a question that I got from someone on one of the platforms was, I want to know how you handled that. So I want to talk through that a little bit. Looking into the why of the behavior, because that is a crucial element when we're in a child-centered session. It's not the behavior, it's the why behind it. And then finally, how to discuss a session like that with parents. So this is going to be jam-packed. There's lots of stuff to talk through together, but I really think this is going to be meaningful because we either have all had a session like this or you will eventually have a session like this. There's no avoiding this kind of session if you do this for any length of time. So let's start with what happened. And I'm going to try to condense as much as possible because an hour worth of interaction is obviously a lot. So I'm going to try to give you a condensed Cliff's Notes version. But essentially, the child didn't want to come back. And this is a child I've been seeing for quite a while. Usually, there's no resistance to come back, but he's refusing to come back. He's refusing to wear his arm brace. He had just broken his arm. So he refused to put his arm brace on, and he can't play without wearing his brace. Refused to do that. Refused to come back. Told his mom he was refusing to go to his concert at school that night. He was supposed to sing in a performance with his classmates. Refused to let her go because she said, okay, well, even if you choose not to go, you're choosing to come and watch your classmates, even if you don't choose to participate. And he's like, no, you're not allowed to go. So obviously, right out of the gate, there's power and control. And I'm not aware of why in this moment, but I'm definitely noticing that he feels powerless and he's grasping at any measure of control that he can have. So mom notices the dynamic. She was kind of pushing for him to go back. And neither should you, never force a child to come back to the playroom. So if it means that I sit in the lobby for the whole hour, that's what we do. It means that I give them the time and the space, and when they're ready, they go back willingly. I never coerce, I never convince, I never bribe, I never negotiate. I just acknowledge what they're expressing. And so mom was a little bit pushy with trying to get him to go back. And I think she finally realized, okay, I need to get myself out of this. So she said, I'm going to go call your dad. I'm going to go outside so that I can call your dad back. He called me earlier. Well, my client says, can I come with you? And she says, no, this is your time with Miss Brenna. So you stay in here and I'm going to go outside. Well, as soon as she tried to leave, he jumped up and ran after her and they meet at the front door. So it became very clear to me. He's grabbing onto her leg, saying he has to go out with her. Again, power and control. So it becomes very clear to me that she's going to give in because she kind of was like, oh, come. And I could just see the resignation of, I don't want this fight, so I just won't go outside. So I looked at her and I mouthed the words, go. I guess that's one word. I mouthed the word, go. And so then I looked at him and I said, our playtime is for staying in the building. So you can choose to stay in the lobby if you're choosing not to go back to the playroom, but you're choosing not to go outside because our playtime is for inside and mom needs to go make a phone call. And he says, I'm going too. And I said, you'd really like to go, but our playtime is for staying inside. So if you choose to try to go outside with mom, you choose for me to hold you. But if you choose to stay in here on your own, you choose for me not to hold you. So mom heard me give that choice, and she waited until he had the opportunity to tell me what he wanted, which of course he remained silent, which means I don't want to make that choice, which is in itself a choice. We talked about that in the choice giving episode. So by choosing not to choose, that is also a choice. And so I gave him one more round of the choice. I repeated it again, and he said nothing. So I said, okay, you're choosing for me to hold you while mom goes outside. So she opens the door, leaves, and I just was kind of like hugging him. And as soon as she walks out the door, he lunges for the handle and tries to open it. So I just stood in front of the handle and I said, you really want to go out and see mom, but the building isn't for leaving because our playtime is for inside. He proceeds to start yelling and kicking me and kicking the door. He actually laid down on the floor and started slamming his feet into the bottom of my door. And my doors are like almost completely glass. So that was very dangerous. I didn't want the door to get broken. I didn't want glass to shatter and fall on him. So he's kicking me. He's kicking the door. He's yelling. He's trying to grab at the handle. And I'm just standing there holding the handle this whole time this is happening. But I'm setting limits on his kicking. So I'm saying, I'm not for kicking. I know that you're angry, but I'm not for kicking. The door is not for kicking. You really want to go outside, but the door is not for kicking. You can choose to go over there and kick. So we went through that several times. He continues to kick the door. So I said, if you choose to kick the door one more time, you choose for me to pick you up and move you further away from the door. He kicked it. I moved him further away from the door. He army crawls himself back to the door, kicks it again. We went through that three or four times. At this point, I don't know if mom is watching. I don't know if mom is aware of what's happening. I mean, he is screaming. He is yelling. He is kicking. This is big. So I have no idea if mom saw or heard what was going on. I'm hopeful she didn't, but she trusted me to handle it either way. So I really don't know. But after the third iteration of him kicking the door, after I'd already picked him up three times, I would move him about 5 feet away from the door and sit him down. And then he would come back and do it again. So after the third round, I said, if you choose to kick the door again, you're choosing for me to take you into the hallway. He kicks the door again. So I said, okay, you've chosen for me to take you into the hallway. So I pick him up, I carry him into the hallway, and that is behind a hallway door. So now he's like behind the reception area in the hallway. He starts kicking me harder, hitting me harder, grasping at that door handle, kicking the door. So at that point, I'm standing and kind of my legs are blocking his legs so that he can't kick the door. And I'm setting the same limit again and again. So he starts elbowing me, he starts hitting me, he starts kicking me. So I'm setting limits on that. So we go through the same thing all over again. And I say, if you choose to kick me or the door again, you're choosing for me to pick you up and carry you into the playroom. It happens again. So I say, you've chosen for me to pick you up and take you into the playroom. So I carry him into the playroom. And this is when it gets crazy. He loses it. I mean, he is so mad. He is so upset. He is screaming. He is crying. He is screeching. He's growling. I mean, everything. And he continues to try to get out of the door. And I'm continuing to just stand in front of the door and I'm holding the doorknob. And I keep reflecting, you're really angry. You really are mad. You are choosing to try to hurt me. So I just continue my reflective responses. And at this point, he realizes I'm not going to physically hurt her enough for her to stop because he's still trying to kick me. He's still hitting me. He's elbowing me. He starts throwing toys at me at one point. So this continues and he realizes now, okay, so let me back up. So this child has been conditioned that if he escalates and ups the ante and keeps going and gets more and more aggressive and more violent and screams and keeps going and keeps at it, he eventually gets his way. So he learned that this is a whole new ball game with Miss Brenna, right? Because I just keep getting out of the way of his kicks. At one point he got really mad about this, but at one point I was holding his shoulders and I could get my body away from him far enough that he could not kick me because his legs weren't long enough. So I was just holding him far enough away on his shoulders that he couldn't actually make contact with me kicking. And that made him irate. So then he starts screaming and trying to elbow me and everything. And so he's so angry. And the whole time I'm just either moving him away from the door, I'm holding him away from me so he can't hurt me, or I'm just standing in front of the door reflecting that he's really angry and upset. So then he realizes, okay, I can't scare her enough. I can't hurt her enough. I can't get her to give in. So he starts destroying the room. He's trying to pull shelves over on top of him. He knocks my entire clothing rack over and then kind of dismantles it. And it's metal, like big metal pieces. So then he's trying to pick up these big metal pieces, and I'm sure he was going to throw them at me. So I'm standing on the metal pieces, keeping them on the ground while I'm saying, that is not for throwing. I'm not for throwing that at. He tried multiple times to flip my sand tray, and I was able to put my hand on it so that he couldn't flip it. But then he realized that if I moved over to stop the tray from getting flipped over, he could make a beeline for the door and try to leave the playroom. So on like the fourth or fifth attempt, I realized I just have to let him flip the tray, because then otherwise, if I go over to stop the tray, he's going to try to leave the playroom. So I just stood by the door. He flips the tray. He knocks my easel over. He throws my stools. He starts throwing toys. He starts swiping shelves. He starts swiping cubbies. He's chucking game board games across the room. I have so many marks and dents on my wall that we have to cover up with paint. He really did a number. And the whole time he's screaming. I mean, angrily, aggressively, dysregulatedly screaming. And, you know, snot's flying out of his nose. And I mean, he is just so overwhelmed. And I just keep saying, you are really angry, but I am not for throwing things at. And so there were several times that I said, if you choose to throw something at me again, you choose for me to hold you so that I don't get hurt. And he would chuck something at me. So I would hold his arms against him, and then he would scream and he would kick. And I would say, okay, I'm letting go. But if you choose to throw something at me again, you're choosing for me to hold you again. And I mean, this went on, it seemed like 24 hours, but in reality, from the time we entered the playroom to the time that he gave up and got calm was a little bit less than 20 minutes. So in the grand scheme of things, 20 minutes really wasn't that bad, but boy, did it feel long. So that was kind of what happened. Then he finally gives in, he concedes, he realizes that he's not going to win, that the limits are the limits, and he's not going to go outside and see mom, and he's not going to be violent and aggressive toward me, and he's not going to ruin toys in the room, et cetera, et cetera. So he finally flops down on top of Bobo, which is the inflatable bop bag, and he just lays there for the duration of the session. And he continued to moan and make noises and kind of cry. At one point, I think it was just noise. I don't think he was actively crying anymore, but it was just like, ah. And you know, he's just laying there. And for the last 20 or 25 minutes, he was completely calm, didn't move, didn't do anything. So as soon as he flopped on top of Bobo, I immediately sat down next to him on the ground. My back was to the door, but I was just sitting up against the door next to him on the ground. And then he was calmer and he was quieter. And so I could talk softly. And I said, you're still really sad. You're still really upset. And you're choosing to just take a break and not do anything else today. And so I just continued to reinforce that, continued to reflectively respond. He never moved for the rest of the session. Finally said, how many more minutes do we have? And I said, oh, you're wondering how much time we have left. We have 8 more minutes. He waited those last 8 minutes. He sat up and like Bobo was completely wet. And I honestly think it was a combination of tears, snot, and sweat all together. There were like rivulets dripping down the side of Bobo. His hair was wet. His shirt was wet. His face and his ears and his neck were wet. I mean, he was a disastrous mess. And I'm thinking to myself, I have no idea what's going to happen when we go out and see mom. I don't know if he's going to be mad at her, be mad at me, get dysregulated again. I had no idea what was going to unfold. He walks out, gives mom a hug. She tells him that dad was coming with clothes to go to the concert. And he goes, okay. It was absolutely the most miraculous thing. And she obviously didn't know the whole extent of everything that had happened. And I have since debriefed with her, and I'll get to that in a moment. And she responded that they had an amazing night. They went to the school. He dressed up in his clothes. He had dinner. He did not choose to sing, but he went and he watched and he was calm and he was in a good mood and he was compliant. And she said they had no issues the rest of the evening. So there's the overview. So now let's dive into some of these components. So mess making play. You will, throughout the course of your career, have kids that are so dysregulated, they just have to make a mess. Because remember, their play and what they're showing you is a reflection of what's going on internally. So when he realized he couldn't hurt me, he turned it on. I still need an outlet for all of this anger and all of this sadness and all of this frustration and this loss of power and this loss of control. So I just have to destroy anything I can get my hands on. So the room was absolutely destroyed. And I've had plenty of kids do that before. I mean, I have pictures that I've saved of my room in actually a worse state than this kid left it in. But I mean, my sand tray was flipped over. There's a pile of sand all over the floor. My easel's down. My puppet theater's down. My clothing rack is down. There's toys everywhere. There's games everywhere. I mean, it was a wreck. And the mess making play is necessary. And I have a lot of therapists that I know that would never let a child do that in their room. But if you believe in the child-centered model, and if you trust the child-centered process, they show you through their play where they are. And that is where he was. He was so internally wound up, and there was so much internal chaos and so much dysregulation and so much overwhelm and so much upheaval. He had to get it out. And how else do you do that other than creating that scene in a playroom? That's how you communicate when you can't do it verbally. He couldn't even talk. All he did for 20 minutes straight was scream. And honestly, every time I reflected his feeling, every time I set a limit, he was so loud and he was so crazy. I was like, I don't even know if he can hear me. So I kind of felt that maybe it was not even worth my time, but you trust the process, right? So you continue to set limits. You continue to reflect feelings. You continue to track behavior. Even if they can't hear it, even if they can't receive it, you still have to trust the skills. So I kept doing it. I have no idea if he heard me. And so mess making play is powerful. And is it a pain in the butt to have to clean up that entire room? Yes. Did the entire time I sit there going, oh my word, this is going to take me 4 hours to pick up? Yes. And thankfully it didn't. My office manager is amazing and she went in and helped and got it taken care of pretty quickly. But, you know, of course the, you know, personal side of it in me is like, please stop this. But when kids need to swipe shelves and when they need to throw stuff and when they need to make a mess, there's a reason for it. So the mess making play was just representative of where he was. The aggression. We've talked about this before. You don't want to be vulnerable. So you mask it with anger and aggression because it makes you feel powerful. He already felt powerless. He already felt out of control. And let me circle back to, I didn't know at the time why he was so power and control hungry. He was scared to death of the concert. He was scared of not being able to sing. He was scared of everyone watching him. He was scared about what his hair was going to look like after being at school all day. He was scared about what he was going to wear. He was scared about... So all of this unfolds later in the evening. He had so much anxiety and fear over this concert. You feel powerless and out of control. So what's the way that you handle that? You mask it with anger and aggression. So a lot of therapists say, you know, I don't even have aggressive toys in my room because I don't like the idea of a child being aggressive. I don't like aggressive play. I don't like it when a child is aggressive in my playroom. And every therapist needs to make their own choices. But aggression is the natural process in play therapy. I just did an episode on my take on aggressive toys in a playroom. So if you missed that, go back and listen to it. I think aggressive toys are necessary. And here's the thing. He didn't even use aggressive toys. He was just playing aggressively. So he could have done that even if I didn't have swords and handcuffs and guns in there. So really, it's aggressive play that makes people uncomfortable, not the toys. And do I like, I mean, I have a couple of bruises from that exchange. So did I like dealing with his aggression? No. Was my heart beating really fast and was I sweaty? Yes. When I finally slumped against the door, when he finally like laid over Bobo and got calm, I slumped against the door and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am so hot and my heart is pounding and I'm hungry. Like I was feeling all of my own somatic reactions to the experience, right? Because his emotion impacts me, his aggression impacts me, but I wouldn't have had it any other way. Because while I'm setting limits on him hurting me, his aggression, again, was demonstrating how he felt. I feel powerless, I feel out of control, so I have to take back power. And the only way I know how to do that is to be angry and aggressive because it makes me feel powerful. So that was an important distinction. Okay, I thought it would be important to talk about the fact that I kept picking him up. I kept holding him. I kept pushing him away from me so he couldn't kick me. So, and even without this scenario, I've had people reach out and ask me, do you let a child sit on your lap? Do you let a child hug you? How do you handle physical touch? You know, like what do you do when you're in the lobby and a child comes up to you and, you know, where's the boundary of what's appropriate and what isn't? That's for another episode, I think. But anytime we have had to physically touch a child outside of the traditional high five, hug, the child comes and sits on your lap, the child, you know, comes up and leans up against you, something like that. That's just like the relational connection type of touch. In this case, I had to pick him up multiple times. I had to carry him down the hallway several times. I had to hold him so that he wasn't hurting me. In those scenarios, my policy is I always tell a child what they're choosing before I touch them. So if you noticed, at every moment along the way, I said, if you choose to do that again, you're choosing for me to pick you up. If you choose to do that again, you're choosing for me to hold you. If you choose not to do that, you choose for me not to hold you. And then you have made it very clear, you've given the child a choice to not be touched if their behavior doesn't require it. And I made it very clear that mom knew that. So in the lobby before she left, she heard me three times say, if you choose to stay in here on your own, you choose for me not to touch you. But if you choose to try to leave when mom goes outside, you choose for me to hold you. So I just make it a policy that I state it several times so that everyone is aware that I didn't just randomly touch your child for no reason. There was a choice was made, and that was the consequence. So that is the way we handle that. All of my therapists have had to pick a child up, carry a child, hold a child. It just happens. And when you are gentle and when you are loving, but firm, a child knows that you are trying to keep them safe or you're trying to make sure that something bad doesn't happen. If he wouldn't have been kicking the door, I wouldn't have picked him up. If he wouldn't have been kicking me, I wouldn't have held him. So remember, universal rules for why we set limits. I need to be safe. You need to be safe. Things can't get broken. And he was violating all three of those requirements. So in those moments, if you cannot choose to control yourself, you're choosing for me to secure myself, you, or the environment. So that is how we handle touching kids. Okay, so then what do we do when we are internally having to work through things on our own? So I get the question, you know, how did you do this? I think it comes from a lot of internal work, first of all. I think you have to know, as a child-centered play therapist, where you fall what your red flags are, what you can handle, and what you can trust as far as the process. So, like I said, was I sweaty? Yes. Was my heart pounding? Yes. Did I feel kind of all crazy inside? Yes. Did I breathe a huge sigh of relief when I could finally sit down on the floor next to him? Yes. So it was affecting me, but externally, my responses were completely calm and completely neutral. So you have to stay present, right? I can't be going, oh my word, I can't believe this. Look at this room. This is a disaster. All that sand. Oh my gosh, it's probably under the baseboard. That is internal distractions, and it takes you away from being present with the child. So you stay present in the moment, and you put your own emotion off to the side, and your responses remain completely calm and neutral. How do you do that best? You fall back on your child-centered principles. I need to reflectively respond. I need to show the be with attitudes. I need to set limits in a neutral way. I need to give choices so that he can have the opportunity to self-regulate. I need to reflect his feelings so that he feels heard. You constantly focus on your skills because that allows you to trust the process. I wasn't happy about any of it. I mean, my bruises reflect how difficult it was, actually. But I kept thinking to myself, this is where he is, meet him where he is. Keep yourself safe, keep him safe, make sure things don't get ruined and broken as much as possible. But beyond that, this is where he is, it has to be okay. Because when you trust the process, you don't have to get involved other than to use your skills. So I think that comes with knowing yourself. I think that comes with your internal work. I think it comes from recognizing, I don't like this, but it's okay. And so that's just kind of my mentality of how I went through that. And I think it also helps to look at the why. Because he was not trying to hurt me. He was not trying to be aggressive specifically to cause injury to me. He was not trying to destroy my room just to destroy my room. So if you just look at behavior, you get a very different response and reaction than when you look at the why. He felt powerless. He felt out of control. He got dysregulated. He's used to getting his way when he escalates. And so he thought, okay, I'll make it bigger. Okay, I'll yell louder. Okay, I'll hit you harder. Okay, I'll make a bigger mess. And he kept waiting for me to concede. And the reality is, in a play therapy room, you don't concede when you set a limit. So I just continued to go back to the limit. And I continued to reflect, and I continued to give choices. And so the why was, I feel out of control and powerless, and I'm trying to grasp at it. And now I'm not getting my way. And now my emotions are so high, I can't even think anymore. And now I've escalated so much that I can't even get myself back under control. And it was a cascade. So when you look at it in those terms, it's a lot easier to trust the process and remain calm inside because you know the why. So I think that helps too. And then finally, how do you discuss a session like this with parents? Because she went outside. Again, I don't know if she witnessed what was going on at the front door, but she had no idea what happened once I took him behind the door in the hallway and once I took him into the room. I asked my office manager if she could hear him yelling and crying out in the front, and she said yes. So when mom came back in, I'm sure she heard him crying. But when he came out, his face is red, his eyes are red, he's covered in sweat, snot, tears, whatever. And so, you know, that's a really hard pill to swallow when you're a parent and you take your kid to therapy and that's their experience, right? So how did I handle that? As they were walking out the door, the child had already walked through the front door, and I said, I'm going to email you so that I can process what happened. She said, okay. And this family trusts me. They trust the process. And I actually thanked them for that. I said, thank you for trusting me to handle it. I know that's hard. Thank you for believing in my ability to therapeutically address what was going on. So first of all, I thanked them for the trust and the faith that they put in me and in the process. But then I said, okay, I want you to know there were multiple times that I had to pick him up. There were multiple times that I had to hold him. I was always gentle. I was always loving, but I was firm. And I constantly gave him choices because here's what you don't want to happen. You don't want a kid to go home and say, she grabbed me and she dragged me down the hall and she, you know, pinned me up against the wall. I mean, I don't know if he said anything. They said the only thing he said about the whole session was he had a hard time and he really just wanted to be with his mom. So that was his take on it, but who knows what he might have said, right? So I'm always very transparent with parents. If a child gets hurt, they bump their head, they crash into the sand tray and they're in their back, you know, they get a red mark on their back. When I go out to the lobby, I always say, I just wanted to let you know he bumped his head. He hit his ear on the edge of the bookshelf. He has a little mark on his back from the sand tray. He came up underneath it because you never want them to question what happened in that playroom. So I said, thank you for trusting me. Number two, I want you to know he chose for me to pick him up and hold him multiple times. Here's what that looked like. I want you to know he was kicking and throwing and trying to destroy things. So in those moments, I had to keep both of us safe. And sometimes that meant I had to hold him. So I helped them understand why I did what I did. And then I went into the why behind all of this was his fear over the concert. He felt powerless. Here, that helps us understand the behavior. And then I went into, here are the things that I think are positive about what happened tonight. I said, it only took him 20 minutes to completely give in and remain calm for the rest of the session. He learned that when a limit is set, it means something. And he's, no matter what he does, he's not going to get his way. He learned that from a therapeutic standpoint, our relationship survived and was still okay. Before he left that night, I got down in front of him and I said, I'm curious if when you come next time, if you think you'll choose to come back to the playroom right away, or if you are going to decide how you want the night to go like you did tonight. And he said, I'm not sure. I said, okay, well, it's always up to you. You can choose to come back and play. You can choose to stay in the lobby. But when you come here, our playtime is for staying inside the building. So as long as you choose to stay inside the building, you're in charge when you come next time. And he said, I know. So there was the check-in from my end. Did this fracture our relationship? Are you angry at me? Do you blame me for this? Are you resentful? Are you bitter? Is this going to make you not want to come next week? And here's the beauty of the child-centered model. Our relationship stayed intact. Why? Because I am consistent. When I set limits, I don't change my mind. When I give you a choice and you choose the negative outcome, you choose the negative outcome. I'm going to accept you. I'm going to love you. I'm going to show you the be with attitudes. I'm going to reflect your feeling. I'm going to do everything that I always do, no matter how you act. But when you choose certain choices, you choose certain outcomes. So even in the midst of all of this, he's screaming, he's kicking, he's hitting, he's fighting, he's destroying my room. He still felt wholly loved, wholly accepted, and our relationship was not affected by any of it. And that's the beauty of the child-centered model, because he had other options and he didn't choose. So when you fill parents in on things like this, you just want to reinforce, here are the things that I see as positives in this exchange. Here are the things that you need to know. And thank you for trusting me. And I really do feel that this was a really therapeutically valuable interaction. And at the end, I said, and I'm really glad that I was able to see it escalate to that degree, because now I have a better understanding of what happens and why. I mean, parents can tell you all day long, oh, he loses it. Oh, he gets really violent. Oh, he starts screaming and he screams for 2 hours and he won't give in. So you get these stories and it kind of paints a picture for you. But when you see it escalate to that level in real time, it gives you a very different perspective on where that child is and his lack of self-regulation and his lack of self-control. And I mean, all of that was very, very evident to me because I got to witness it. And witnessing it is one thing, being therapeutically involved, that was such a gift for him and for me because he was able to navigate that with me in a therapeutic environment with therapeutic guide rails, helping him to get through it. And what you don't know is this child, when he has meltdowns and moments like that, mom and dad say it ruins the whole rest of the night. It'll sometimes be 4, 5, 6 hours that he can never come back from it. And it was 20 minutes. And then the rest of the evening was delightful. He was compliant. He was happy. He was in a good mood. He went to school. He watched the concert. They had a lovely evening. So what lesson for him? That's a powerful lesson. I can't escalate and get my way. And I was able to rein myself back in and get myself back under control. Hugely beneficial for him. So I hope that is helpful for you. You will rarely have sessions like that, thankfully. But that was the magic of play therapy right before my very eyes. And I'm just grateful that I was able to be a part of it. I'm grateful that his parents trust me. I'm grateful that we have the type of relationship, meaning me and my client, that we survived that because that was big. And we both came out of it and our relationship is only stronger for it. So there's the debriefing of my crazy session. And, you know, it was definitely not what I was expecting, but ended up being a really positive outcome. And I think great things are in store for the work that he's ready to do, because that really was kind of a breakthrough for him to let go that much. And I can't wait to see what unfolds in the next few sessions. So there's the debrief. I would love to hear from you if you want to reach out to me and give me your comments, questions. I'd love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And if you would like to train with me either at my center in Tampa or virtually, please go to playtherapynow.com and you can fill out a form so that I can get in touch with you about training opportunities. I'm really grateful for you all. This audience continues to grow. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for engaging. Thank you for being invested. This is such an amazing, amazing thing for me. I'm really grateful for all of you. And share this with your colleagues, share this with your coworkers. I would love for the world to be just overflowing with child-centered play therapists. I think that would be such a cool thing. So thank you as always for spending part of your week with me. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.